It's a tremendous host to be here to introduce Rabbi Weil in the Bnei Shoren Beis Medrash program. We are fortunate to both have Rabbi Weil in our community and also to be a Ma'ale Shir for us in Mincha Chinuch from time to time, and to agree to give this series. There will be two more lectures after tonight, and tonight's lecture is the one man who could have stopped the Chorban. And the learning this summer is for Refu Shlema, Chaim Yisachar, and Chaim Mishkat, and for all Holy Yisrael, Shlema Refu Shlema. The Kavod Gadol, Rabbi Weil.
Henry, thank you very much. Yeah, when we introduced last week's shiur, we talked about the impact that Steven Spielberg had on the world, on the American population, just in terms of being able to relate to the Holocaust. The survey that was done before Schindler's List, the survey afterwards. We spoke about another example of the Diary of Anne Frank, and that's why we went into the story of the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel Cohen Gadol. We're going to take a similar approach. It's not our approach, it's actually the approach of the Kalir. And we'll see that it's actually not the Kalir's approach. As we see tonight's learning, he took this methodology straight out of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. This was the original one who had this approach was Jeremiah, the Navi. What we're going to do this evening, when we analyze the individual, mourn the loss of the individual, and every individual, as we said, is Olam Malay, the individual we're going to focus on was actually a person of very significance. Not just he was a significant person himself, but he actually had the potential to change the world, literally to change the Jewish world. And we'll see who that individual is in just a moment. It's the 11th Kina, and it's the story of Yoshiyahu HaMelech. You know, for instance, remember there was a famous Clint Eastwood film, The Outlaw Josie Wales. So many, many Protestant Christians were named their child Josie. Where does Josie come from? Not from Joseph, but Josiah. Josiah, of course, is the English name for Yoshiyahu. Who was Yoshiyahu? And I just want to make a 10-second caveat. As opposed to last week where we analyzed it line by line by line and developed it that way, because of time, what we're going to do is most of the shiur will be outside. Then we'll go back, and what we do outside we'll put into the text in the last 10 to 12 minutes. We'll see everything fit into the text at the end. So we're going to primarily be outside for most of the shiur. Who is Yoshiyahu? And where we have to start is, we go back to Hezekiah, Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Chizkiyahu HaMelech has become alive to us, Bizman HaZeh, because we know the wall that he built to expand Yerushalayim, where he leaves actually the Ir David and goes into what we call the Ir Atika. In his time, in the Bais Rishon, that was actually a new movement into that part of Jerusalem. We know Hezekiah's tunnels, right? We've all been there in the Ir David. Chizkiyahu HaMelech was a great educational reformer. It says, right, from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south, you couldn't find a school child who wasn't learned in the areas of Tumah V'Tahara. What's the point? It's the more esoteric, abstract areas of Judaism. It's a Kal V'Chomer, all the more so, that everyone was knowledgeable in financial law and domestic law and the law of the holidays and every day. He was a great, great leader. He had a premonition, the Ruach HaKodesh, a divine premonition. He perceived that the child he would produce would be a Rasha. And therefore what? He decided not to have children. Remained a bachelor. He's in the process of dying. It's the Gemara in Brachos analyzes this. And in Yeshaya, the prophet, in his time, Yeshaya HaNavi, comes to be Mevaker Chola. And he says, you're going to die. Because you don't play God. Bahadeh kvashe derachmana lamalach. Those secret things, your job is puravu. That's your obligation. Your obligation is to follow the Torah and to follow Halacha, not to play God. So the Melech Chizkiyahu, he says to the prophet, he says, first of all, I know what you're saying is wrong, because we have a tradition. Afilu cheret chada munachas al tzavaro. Even if a sharp sword is lying on one's neck, you never give up. You always can do tshuva. There can always be the hand of Hashgacha. And a person can change, and Hashgacha can change. So he says to Yeshaya, look, you have a single daughter. Let me marry your daughter. Maybe with you as a grandfather, your daughter as a mother, me as a father, maybe we have a shot. They got married, they had a child. Now the problem, and we know that the psychologists tell us, is manazeh, one of the greatest factors in children rebelling, revolting. We say going off the derech, but it's not limited to Jewish children or to Orthodox children. But where children really reject the path of their parents, one of the greatest factors is when you have a grandfather acting like a father. Right? We all know people, whether it's a second marriage, whether they get married later in life, a 25 or 28-year-old father has a lot more energy than a 45-year-old father, than a 55-year-old father. And what happens is there's a gap that cannot be transcended. There's a reason why a parent is a parent, a grandparent is a grandparent. So Menashe is born at a later age to Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu passes on. Menashe becomes the leader of the Jewish people. Menashe, Melech Menashe, in our history, in the history of the Jewish people, no one has been the executive, no one has been the leader of our people for longer years than Menashe. 55 years. 55 years. And it was a terrible 55 years. Even though Menashe himself is only corrupt the first 33, when I say only, but when you run a corrupt government, where you undermine the kahuna and the education of the kahuna, where you establish pagan gods, where you undermine the whole authority of the judiciary to have a system of justice and ethics and morals, where essentially you have a situation where the weak and the downtrodden don't feel they can get justice, where you corrupt philosophical values, where you destroy the Sifrei Torah, or you basically bury the Sifrei Torah, so there's no text to learn and study from. Between Menashe's 55 years, and even after he does tshuva, the last 22 years of his reign, he no longer has the influence over the people. So he himself changes, but society doesn't change. And then his son, Amon, for 7 years, 62 years of corruption, 62 years of terrible leadership the Jewish people have. Why is this significant? Why are we talking about this if this is about Yoshiyahu? Because I want to try to set a frame of reference for what Yoshiyahu is walking into. Let me use a modern analogy. When you watch the Persians who have come to America, whether it's the Teheranis, whether it's the Mashadis, the Southern Jews, the Shirazis, the Isfahanis, they have a feeling, a chush for Yiddish, an appreciation for it. Whether they're necessarily all observant, but they become Jews, they become involved in Israel, involved in Jewish charity, involved in Jewish education. The same is true looking at the Ethiopian community moving to Israel. The same is true if we go back to the 1950s, when the Moroccans were dislodged, the Tunisians, the Algerians were dislodged, either went to France or to Israel. When the Iraqis were driven out, Operation Magic Carpet, when they were driven out of Iraq, after more than 2 millennia, and they come to Israel. There's a feeling for it. There's a development. The whole Shas party, where does its votership come from? From Sephardic Jews who have a passion and a feel for Yiddish. Where did that not take place? The Jews of 7 decades of communism. After 7 decades of mocking religion, of making it look like it is infantile, ridiculous, and moronic, the success rate that our community had of integrating Jews from the former Soviet Union in the Brezhnev years in the 70s, the success that we're having after Glasnost and Perestroika in the late 80s, early 90s, is abysmal, both here and in Israel. I'm not saying there aren't Bala Tshuva. I'm not saying there isn't the Rabbi Assas. There isn't the Sharansky, a Mendelevich. But they're not the rule. There's a reason why we haven't had a good immigration in terms of integrating those Soviet Jews into mainstream Judaism. Because 7 decades of communism, 7 decades of socialism, what it does is it's extremely, extremely difficult to undo 3 generations of a culture, of a mentality, of a psyche. Use that analogy to what Yoshiyahu walks into. Yoshiyahu, and just to quote one of the phrases that the Kalir uses, I apologize if you want to look at this text. Most of the text we're going to do at the end. It says the following. The Gimel, on page 289-288. The Gimel. Amongst all the executives, Melech, I'm not translating as a king because it's an unfair translation, but it's the person who controls the executive branch. Gam b'chol ha-melachim asher kamu l'idgor, lo kam kamohu mimos ha-vigdor.
We never, ever had a leader like Yoshiyahu from the time of Avigdor.
Who was Avigdor? Moshe. As you know, Yocheved and Amram did not name him baby Moses. His name wasn't Moshe, it was what? It was Avigdor. Why do we call him Moshe? Our historical gratitude to the daughter of Pharaoh, the Batya, who saved his life, who nurtured him, who raised him. So we call him Moshe, which is the name she gave him. But his name was Avigdor. Now, all the Mephorshim, when they studied this work of the Kalir, this Kinah, they asked the basic question. What do you mean we never had an executive? What do you mean we never had a leader from the time of Moshe, like Yoshiyahu? What about Shmuel HaNavi? What about Yoshua ben Nun, David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, right? The great pinnacle of Jewish history was during the leadership of David and Shlomo. What do you mean this is the greatest leader? Chizkiyahu was his great-grandfather. The answer is, I'll use an analogy. Phil Jackson just retired, as you know, this June. Probably will go down as the greatest coach in NBA history. There was twice that Phil Jackson was brought into Los Angeles. When he was brought in the first time, he had a Kobe, he had a Shaq, and Winslow McCover, they have a complimentary team. He walked in years 1, 2, and 3 where the three-peat is, championship years. Yes, he's the greatest coach, but if you give him Joe Loser and Ricky the Schlemazel, he's not going to win a championship, no matter how good a coach he is. When you have a Kobe and a Shaq, you can win championships. The second time when he came out of retirement, Jerry West was in Memphis, but his heart was in Hollywood and Beverly Hills. And he sent his best player, Pau Gasol. He gave him for a steal. He gave it to Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson went on to win 2 more championships. What's the point? Phil was starting here, and he took it there. He wasn't starting down here. When David HaMelech inherited the Jewish people from Shaul, and before Shaul, Shmuel HaNavi, he was starting up here. And he took him to a greater level. When Shlomo HaMelech inherited, when he became the leader of the Jewish people, he inherited the people that David left him. So he took it a further level higher. What did Moshe start out with? Moshe started out with primarily a people, a nation of illiterate pagan slaves. Yes, there were Shevet Levi, and yes, there were a few exceptions to the rule. But primarily, these were primitive, illiterate pagan slaves. When we prayed, we couldn't pray in an articulate sense. Batal Shavasim Elohim. We cried out. It wasn't a sophisticated prayer even. Moshe Rabbeinu turned that people into the Dordea. That's exactly what the Kalir means about Yoshiyahu. What drove Yoshiyahu to become Yoshiyahu after a father like his father, after a grandfather like his grandfather? We don't know exactly. Was it adolescent rebellion? Maybe. You know, when a person becomes an adolescent, they start to cut the cord. They start to sever the ties psychologically and emotionally. They don't see themselves as an extension of their parents. And they start to feel their oats. And you start to question, you know, who your parents are and what they are. There's a reason that most of the people in this room either don't have hair or have gray hair. It's not because there's anything wrong with you. It's because you've experienced adolescent children. Okay? Or you're an uncle or an aunt of adolescents. Okay? There's a reason for that. What was the point? Yoshiyahu, when he starts to see the warts and pimples in his father, in his grandfather, in his family, breaks away from that. He sees their hypocrisies. He sees their inconsistencies. And he looks back into his history, into his roots. And he saw that he comes from a different breed. He comes from a Yehoshaphat, an Asa, a Chizkiah, a David, a Shlomo. And there's a second factor that we're told about with Yoshiyahu. We all in our lives have certain traumatic experiences. Now, whether we seize the moment and utilize those traumatic experiences to transform ourselves, you know, we all undergo, we have the potential to undergo catharsis. We don't always seize the moment, carpe diem. What was the trauma in his life? We mentioned before that his grandfather essentially had eradicated most Jewish texts. What was the text? We're way before Gutenberg, right? What was the text? Sefer Torah, Sefer Navi. That was the text. It was a scroll. They were removed. The base of Mikdash itself, they thought, was free. It was, so to speak, Sefer Rhyme or scroll Rhyme. But the Kohanim found, through Hashkafa, it had been hid, it had been concealed, and the Kohanim find the Sefer. And what is it open to? Or what is it rolled to, lo and behold? Parshas Kisavo. Now, why is Parshas Kisavo important? Because in Parshas Kisavo, I actually just came from there. I was in Israel for 3 days. And we spent a part of the day in Ithamar, where the terrible tragedy took place. Ithamar is one of the mountains that surrounds the Via Maris. When Abraham and Yaakov, when they came from Mesopotamia, the way you come into the country is through the valley, the cracks between the mountains. And then it's, what would you call this, a 120 degree angle? Then you do about a 120 degree turn, and what today has become Highway 60 is the valley, that Highway 60 is the valley through the Samaritan mountain range, and then the valley through the Judean hills, that mountain range. It goes all the way through Ephraim, Binyamin, to Yerushalayim, through the Hare Yehuda, go to Hebron, Beit Lechem. So what happens? We're told in Parshas Ra'eh that the new generation, after Moshe's Ketura, after Moshe's demise, the new generation under Yoshua has to make its own Har Sinai, its own covenant with God. And what is that? The event that they will have pieces of Derech when they first enter the land after they cross the Jordan, they're going to go to that point, that key point, which is the bridge of the Via Maris, Shem. And on either side of Shechem, you've got two significant mountains. Har Ebal, which today is a major military, they have the antennas, the radar that can actually monitor things as far as Iraq. That's, by the way, in Har Ebal, where they found Adam Zartal from Haifa University, found the Mizbeach, that we think was the Mizbeach created in the time of Yeshua ben Nun, when the Jews came into the land. They carbon dated the bones they found there. They only found three species of bones. Bovine, cow bones, lamb bones, and goat bones, which, as you know, are three species of korbanos. They carved and dated them to the time of Yoshua. And on the other mountain, a little bit smaller mountain, we call it Har Gerizim. Today on that mountain, that's where the Samaritans live. If you go there Erev Pesach, what do? They take lambs and goats, and they have an altar, and they shef them there. They burn them on the altar. But Har Gerizim was the mountain with the bracha, and Har Ebal is the mountain on the cloak. So you have the 12 brachos of clothes. What is the Sefer Torah open to that they find? It's open to that section in Parshas Kisavo. The last of the brachos in clothes says, Arur Asher Lo Yakin is called Ibrahim Torah Hazos. Asher Lo Yakin. It's the he field that causes it. The one that does not cause to be established. The one that does not cause the words of the Torah to be fulfilled by others. Who is that referring to? It's not referring to the person who's obligated in fulfilling the mitzvot. It's referring to somebody who's responsible that others are mikayim, asher lo yakin, mikayim the mitzvot. Who's that referring to? So if you look in the Ramban, he's not the only one, but he's the most famous one, the Mefarshim teach us, that bracha or klala is referring to the melech. It's referring to the executive. Who controls the system, who controls the judiciary, who controls the educational system, who can tax to create funds to have educators that are out there transforming the population. And they explain to Yoshiyahu, young man, this is the position that you will be in. You will be able to fulfill this, or God forbid not fulfill this. Young man, you can make a difference. You can undo the corruption, the disintegration of our society and civilization. And it traumatizes him. And he feels a certain sense of mission. He sees himself in a position of destiny. that he can make a difference for his people. He can make a difference not only for the destiny of the Jewish people, but ultimately the destiny of humanity. That's why it says in the Kinna, Ben Shmona, from the time he was a young man, he already started to seek out God. He comes into a position of power. And I got to tell you, there's one thing you can say about young people that's positive, two things actually, and one is a negative. The two positives were definitely positives of Yoshiyahu, and the one negative, unfortunately, brings about his downfall. What are the positives of youth, of a young person in their late teens and their 20s? A lot of energy, a lot of vigor, a lot of dynamism. Number two, idealistic, extremely idealistic. And that he was, as we'll see. What are the challenges of someone who's young? Very often you see things in black and white. You don't see things in shades of gray. It's a developmental thing. Until you hit your late 20s, your 30s, developmentally, the mind does not necessarily see things in shades, in gray, in three dimensions. It's very much in clear categories. By the way, that's part of the reason why adolescents can't appreciate parents. Because to them, they can't tolerate hypocrisy. You're either this or you're that. You either fit this box or you don't fit this box. And they can't deal with subtleties and nuance and things that may not fit clearly into a box. And we'll see that with Yoshiyahu in a minute. So what does he do? He does some outstanding, amazing things. First of all, he removes all the idols. Secondly, he commissions Sifrei Torah to be written. Thirdly, he starts using the tax dollars, not for corrupt purposes, but to support decent educators, so that you have this whole educational reformation taking place. You know how the roads, the highway system specifically was neglected? We had a phrase called passive-aggressive. You don't want Jews to come to Yerushalayim for Pesach, for Sukkot, for Shavuos? Very simply, just let the highway system fall apart. Where they don't have proper wells, where they can't travel roads well. Well, stop coming. He goes about, you know, what was it called, the $700 billion, the money that was used, the stimulus package. So Yoshiyahu's stimulus package, in terms of the Department of Transportation, right, the Israeli IDT, the Israeli Department of Transportation, is they start fixing the highway systems so people can make Elias Harego. They put mikvos, they put wells, and things are taking place that no one could have ever dreamed of. After 62 years of corruption, all of a sudden, there's a transformation taking place. Educationally. By the way, he's stopping any private altars that they can find. Because what is a private altar? Besides the fact that it's an Issa D'Oraisa, not to have worship. You can't have worship outside of the Beit HaMikdash. But having private altars is the beginning of the slippery slope that leads to Avodah Zarah. When everybody can do their own thing, we say, Mach Shabbos Brzech, right? When I can have my own franchise, well, you know, I call the shots. I pick who the Kohen's going to be. I pick what we're going to offer, how we're going to offer, what, you know. Put an end to all that. And there was a real significant transformation. Go back to the challenge of youth. You see things in clear ways. Look at the change. They're not publicly worshipping Avodah Zarah. We've got better court systems. We've got more justice. We've got educators. We've got the right Kohanim who are leading us education. And he's excited. And what happens? What happens? What he fails to appreciate is what takes place behind closed doors. I mean, let me use an analogy. You know what we say about the Dor HaMidbar? You can take the Jews out of Egypt, but you can't take Egypt out of the Jews, right? They still had that slave mentality. They had a certain inclination towards Avodah Zarah because that's all that they knew. They didn't have a sense of being independent. Using that analogy, after 7 decades of communism, you can take the Jew out of Russia, can you take Russia out of the Jew? what was the problem? Publicly, you didn't have avodah zarah. Publicly, you didn't have private altars. Great. But you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. You know what they're saying to you? Stick it to Yoshiyahu. Who does that young whippersnapper think he is? What, he's going to undo 6 decades? He's going to change things upside down. I'm old enough to be his father. I'm old enough to be his grandfather. And he's going to tell me who and what to do? Who does he think he is? So behind closed doors, to quote the Kalir, Achar Spiris HaMezuzos, behind the sealed doorpost, he didn't appreciate what was happening. Let me give you specifically what the Kalir refers to. The geopolitics of the Jewish people is this. Beryl Weinberg has a cute phrase. The Ribono Shel Olam never gave us Madagascar as a homeland. We are always in the middle. To use an analogy, we, in terms of the world's dynamic, we're always Wimbledon center court. We're never playing on one of the side courts. We're always center court. Today, who are we between? The great struggle between democracy in the West, we'll call it the Christian world, and Islam. An Islam that is, you know, reverting back to primitive Islam. Just previously, we were in the middle, we were Wimbledon center court between the U.S., the Western democracies, and the Eastern Bloc and communism. This has always been the case. In the times of Tanakh, what was the great dynamic? There was always a great southern empire, Mitzrayim. Now, please do not translate Mitzrayim as Egypt. I know I just did that, and I apologize to you. Egypt is a rinky-dink third-world nation. The last 35 years, it's been living off of American foreign aid. For 4 or 5 decades before that, it was essentially dependent upon communist foreign aid, upon Russian foreign aid. It's a little North African country. Today, half of its population is under the poverty level. That's not what Mitzrayim was. Whether it's the Mitzrayim of Moshe, whether it's the Mitzrayim in the time of Yoshiyahu. Remember, it's two different Mitzrayim. But Mitzrayim was probably a third of the African continent. Mitzrayim controlled the minerals. It controlled all the wealthy resources that the African continent had to offer. It was a major power. Please know that. Then there was always a great northern empire, a great northern power. So we're familiar with the example of Babylonia, Bava, right? Babylonia, what we call Iraq. They're the ones who defeated us. Who destroyed the base of Mikdash, destroyed Jerusalem. Bava, at this point, was not a power. It becomes one eventually. In the time of Yoshiyahu, the great northern empire, the great leader of Mesopotamia was called Aram. Aram, for our purposes, is Turkey, Syria. Good part of Turkey, controlled Syria. Now, who's between the two great powers? The great empire of the south and the great empire of the north? Nebuch. It's us. We're the Via Maris. We're the trade route that links the two great empires. Paro Necho. Paro, you know, is a generic term for the dictator who controls the great southern empire, the pharaoh. His name was Necho. Paro Necho sends word to Yoshiyahu. Listen, I'm not interested in going to war against you. I'm not interested in squashing you. But don't mess with me. I'm coming through. I'm bringing tens of thousands of armed Mitzrim, and we're going to war against the great northern empire, against Aram. I promise you, you're not our objective. Stay out of the way, and you won't be hurt. Now, from a political point of view, you can imagine, Yoshiyahu doesn't want this to happen. You know, I mean, I'll use the analogy. When Napoleon tried to conquer Russia, right? You don't necessarily want to be perceived as siding with Napoleon if you live in the Eastern Empire, because what happens if
He's unsuccessful. And Russia defends itself. And you're fine. So, on a political point of view, it's not like, well, I couldn't do anything, I'm maintaining neutrality. By doing nothing, you're perceived as an ally of Mitzrayim. That's on a political point of view. We don't really know where Yoshiyahu was. Did he favor Mitzrayim? Did he favor Aram? We don't know. But one thing we do know is, he tells Paro Michal, don't do it. Don't enter our land. You may not travel through our homeland. Why? Theologically, he believes his eyes. Theologically, he's not sensitive to the fact that no matter how many great changes he's made, I mean, we haven't seen a Pesach like this in Yerushalayim in hundreds of years. For sure not in the last seven decades. The Jews are coming together. One calling Gadol, one Beis HaMikdash, one nation, one people, one Melech. It's fantastic. By the way, what am I referring to? I'm quoting to you the Haftorah from the second day of Pesach. They describe, they've never seen a Pesach like this. What do you mean? There are more Jews who came to Pesach in Chizkiyahu's time, in David's time. No, the point is that, going back to what we said with the Phil Jackson analogy, when you go from this number all the way up to that, I mean, I'll give you an example. When the stock market is at 13,000 and it goes to 14,000, how will buy, right? When it does such a thing, okay, so that's it, that's nice, but it's a jump of 1/13. When the stock market is down at 7,000 after the crash, and then it comes back to 11,500 or to 12,000, no, that's not 14,000, but that is a heck of a surge. What Yoshiyahu did, just like we described what he did educationally, just like we described what he did in terms of justice, in terms of Avodah Zarah, the same thing happened in terms of Aliyas HaRegel. And that was the purpose of the Haftorah, second day Pesach. So he says the following. And let's take a quick look at Parshas Dukhakosai. He says the following. When you look at the Tochacha, and it says that when the Jewish people are conducting ourselves the way the Jewish people are supposed to, it says we will have peace. And it says the economy will be fantastic. Right? We'll have a great GNP. The land will give its, the trees will give its fruit. The land will produce crops. Why is all that going to happen? Not because that's the reward. Schar mitzvah b'chai amalekha, the Gemara in Kedushin. In this world, you don't see reward for the mitzvah. What is the Tochacha talking about? What is the second paragraph of Shema talking about? That if the Jewish people as a nation, if we conduct ourselves the way we're supposed to, then God facilitates that we fulfill our mission. Our job is to be mamlechus kohanim, to transform the destiny of humanity through theological and philosophical values, through ethical and moral values. So God, instead of us spending our time and energy trying to eke out a living, trying to defend the borders, trying to deal with disease, God takes all that away, that our focus can be on what? Transformation of humanity through values, through principles, through creating an ideal society. So amongst all the opportunities for us to create this ideal society, of a great economy, and the trees bearing fruit, and the land producing crops, and not having sickness, and good weather, not having earthquakes, and all the wonderful things, there's this line that the Almighty gives us in the first Aliyah Parshas Dukhakosai. It says, Cherev lo sa'avor ba'artzakem. The sword will not traverse your land. The sword will not pass through your land. What is that referring to? Two psukim earlier, you just told us. It's going to be peace. So this is not peace. This is something different than peace. What's it referring to? So look at Rashi. The Rav used to quote this Rashi when he repeats this here. Rashi says, I think, four words. Afilu cherev shel shalom. Even the sword of peace. Meaning what? I'll use an analogy. Anyone here ever live in Detroit, Michigan? Okay. Got something from Detroit. Imagine this scenario. The people in Michigan hear the huge roaring sound of diesel engines of Canadian tanks, and they see tens of thousands of Canadian armed soldiers coming through the Windsor Tunnel and the bridge from Windsor connecting Detroit. And these Canadians are on their way down 75,
And the same thing is experienced by the Jews of Cincinnati and the Jews of Louisville as they're on their way to Mexico. I mean, you know, I don't want, if anyone is here from Canada, but I apologize if it's offensive. You know, we usually can't, we think of like tough hockey players in Canada. We don't think of, you know, a great army, a great military. But imagine that there was such a thing, where the Canadian military is traveling through Highway 75 on its way to Mexico. No, we're not going to lose lives, but we wouldn't feel particularly comfortable. We wouldn't particularly feel very at ease watching this happen to us. Yoshiyahu thought that he had created a society, a people that were on the madrega of Cherev Losa'avor Ba'artzachem. That's what he thought. Yirmiyahu comes. Yirmiyahu is now a new Navi. Okay, this is the beginning of Yirmiyahu's role as a Navi. And he begs the Melech, please don't start up with Paro Necho. Please don't go to war with him. You don't understand, young king. You don't understand. What you see is beautiful. It's amazing. It's the start. But you can't change people overnight. Psyche, a mentality, an attitude is something that takes decades to change. It might take generations to change. Please don't start up. The Melech says to the Navi, excuse me, you want to give a drasha? You're a very good drasha. You want to give a shir? You're a good magid shir. You stay in the basement. You stay in the shul. What are you sticking your nose into politics for? This is not your place. You don't belong here. I love you. I respect you. I care for you. But don't lunge it. What are you, a cup collector? Well,
if you're the king, and you're going to try to stop the Pharaoh, Paro Necho, and his tens of thousands of Egyptian soldiers, armed soldiers, where would you go to stop him? So there's one place that historically makes sense, and that's where he went. By the way, just by show of hands, who here has been to Megiddo? One, two, three. So if you ask Jackie, three of us, you've got to go to Megiddo when you're in Israel. Anyone ever hear of the famous, not that I expect you to be doing this Sunday morning, but on a Sunday morning you hear the preachers, Armageddon. What's Armageddon? The famous eschatological wars of Gog and Magog, or we say in Hebrew, Gog and Magog, right? What's Armageddon? It's from the word Megiddo. The great battle will be at the Megiddo Junction. Why? Why is Megiddo so important? And by the way, when you go to Megiddo, you know what you're going to find there? It's fascinating. We now have uncovered, and it goes back to the time of Shlomo HaMelech, we actually have uncovered from Achav, Melech Achav, thousands and thousands of stables. What was their implement of war? The horse. The horse was what carried the chariot. They had tens of thousands of horses. Why did they have their horses in Megiddo? You got a whole country of Israel. Why were they stationed the kings? The army's horses were set up in Megiddo. Why? For a very simple reason. The Via Maris. Whether you're a northern empire attacking or whether you're a southern empire attacking, how do you get through Israel? So you go up the coast. You can't take the Via Maris that I was referring to before, Highway 60, because you don't have a chance of surviving. It's a small valley and there are mountains on either side of the valley. The Jews will stand at the mountains and they'll shoot down on you. You can't go through that Highway 60. You got one way you can do it. You take the coast, right? You go through the Gaza Strip, Ashkelon, Ashkelon, you go up the coast. But where are you going to cut into the country? Where are you going to leave the coast and go in? Well, think about it. What happens to the Megiddo Junction? You go through the Amek, what we call the Amek Israel, the Jezreel Valley. That's not mountainous. That's the flat land. You go through the Amek, and you get all the way into Mesopotamia. Or you get through Israel, or you can determine where you want to go into Israel. So the natural path is what? Going up the coast. Yoshiyahu does not defend Israel. He doesn't attack them at Ashkelon or Ashdod. He gets them at the point where he has to turn and go into through the country, to the Amek. That's where the battle takes place. Nebuch. Tragically. The Egyptians slaughter us.
Think about it. 18, 19, 20-year-old boys. Think about the boys that we send to defend the Jewish people, the boys at Tzahal. These young men, these decent, good young men, they get slaughtered by the Egyptian army. And they take the king, Yoshiyahu HaMelech, and we'll read it inside in a few minutes, and they set him up, after he's been mortally wounded, they set him up as a matara. What is a matara? A bullseye for target practice. And it describes that the Egyptian archers, boom, 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 arrow after arrow. They send arrows into his body. They pierce his body. He's dying. No. They make an example of him. They make an example of him. This is what you do. This is what happens when you mess with Aaron HaKohen. And it says, as he's dying, he no longer, his vocal cords have been wounded. He doesn't have a voice. All he's got is air coming out. His last breath. You know, think about it when you're so famished and you can't even talk. All you can do is whisper. You know, you can get air out of your lips. Because what came out of Ruach Sfasav? Tzadik Avashem. Tzadik Hu Avashem. Those are the last six words off that he said before he expired. Hashem is correct. Sidukadir. Acknowledge. Fihu is his mouth, meaning his message, I rebelled against. What's he referring to? When Yirmiyahu came, Yirmiyahu was representing the Ribbono Shel Olam. And God said, you don't understand Yoshiyahu. What you see is not reality. What they're doing behind closed doors is not what they're doing in public. We're not yet worthy. We're not zocha for that madrega, that level of cheret lo sa'avor ba'artzachem. And it's tragic. He was killed in the summer of 608 before the Common Era. Why is that important? Let's see, we'll read inside what the Kabir says. 608 before the Common Era is 22 years before what date? 22 years before Churban Bayis Rishon, before the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. That fall, meaning that Sukkot, which would have been 2 months later, the whole Jewish world would have come to Sukkot, to the Beis Hamikdash, to hear him. I apologize for this. I'm just going to stand up here for a second. They create a platform. Once every 7 years, after the Shemitah year, we have a mitzvah called, it's a 612th mitzvah, it's called Hakel. What's Hakel? See, normally the Jews come for Pesach. There's a Chiyuv Kares, if you don't bring Korban Pesach. So everyone's pretty firm about coming to Yerushalayim for Pesach. Shavuos is the least, because who's going to turn around 7 weeks later? People close by, people that are really firm and makbid, they're going to come for Shavuos. Sukkot is in between. Not as many people coming for the Beis Hamikdash as Pesach, but many more than Shavuos. What happens? There's one Sukkot every 7 years that they come. You know which year that is? The year of Hakel, after the Shemitah year. Why? Because it's a scene. The mitzvah in Parshas Vayel says you bring anashim, nashim v'tam. Not just the men and women, but you bring the little kids. It's past their bedtime, but it's an experience. It's an awesome experience when the whole Jewish world is there. And the Melech gets up and he reads sections of Sefer Devarim, the Aseret Dibros, and Ves Hon, Parsha Shema, the Brachos and Klalos, the Tochacha. Key sections of Sefer Devarim are read, and it's an experience. Each generation, they reenact the Har Sinai experience. Each generation, they reenact their own covenant with God. Instead of all the Jews coming together, the whole Jewish world coming for this once in a generation, once every 7 years experience, he didn't live to make it to that. You know what all the Jews came together for? His funeral. And his, you know who gave the hesped at his funeral? Yirmiyahu HaNavi. And every one of us knows what the hesped is. It's the fourth chapter of Eicha, what we call Eicha Yuam Zahav. How could it be that this gold is something that radiates, right? Yerushalayim Shal Zahav, that beautiful radiant gold, how can it be that it's dark, it's sullied, its tinge has lost its shine. And Yirmiyahu employs the methodology of the acrostic, of the Aleph base. It's 22 lines, Eicha Yom Zav, from Aleph to Tav. What's the idea? What was Yirmiyahu teaching us? I can use every letter in the alphabet. I can try to describe it from A to Z, from Aleph to Tav, and we can't fathom the loss of losing Yoshiyahu. The death of Yoshiyahu, there's nothing, we can use every word we have, we can use every letter we have, and we cannot describe the impact. In the Kalir quotes to us, we'll read it inside in 2 minutes, the Kalir quotes to us that what? Because those same cynics, those same sarcastic people who used to mock him, stick it to him, that young punk. Who does he think he is? Who does he tell us what to do? I'll spit on him behind closed doors. They wouldn't do it to his face. It was to his face they had reverence, they were afraid of him, but they hated him. They mocked him behind his back. Those cynics, they cried. They felt terrible. They felt remorse. You know the famous line that we have, the three parshas after Pesach. Acharei mos kedoshim emor. After you're dead, then they realize, they say how holy you were. You know, while you're alive, they eat your kishkas out. Mamash eat your kishkas out. After you're dead, then they realize what they had in you. Then they appreciate you. And that's what happened with Yoshiyahu. The very people who despised him and mocked him, only after he was gone did they appreciate what they had in this great young man. In this breath of fresh air. This is the one man who could have stopped the Khurban. When he died, everything fell apart. You know who the next king was? Yehoyakim. Melech Yehoyakim was one of the worst Jewish leaders we ever had. I mean, just Chazal tell, just to give you, there's two examples of reflection of how bad he was. The original Eicha was not the five chapters that we have of Eicha. It was chapters 1, 2, and 4. Chapter 4, we mentioned, is the eulogy for Yoshiyahu. It was not meant to be said in the past. It was a nevuah of what would be. Yehoyakim, what did he do with Yirmiyahu? He incarcerates him. We think we know where the Chatzar HaMatara was. It was an underground prison. You imagine that being underground, the lack of sunlight. That's what they did to the Melvi Hashem, to the man of God. So Baruch ben Neriah, the student of Yirmiyahu, takes the document, and they give documents to the people, and gives a document to King Yehoyakim. When Yehoyakim, when he reads it, you know what he does? He burns it. This is the word of God warning him. He burned it. Chazal tell us, Gemara in Sanhedrin, he tattooed his male genitalia with a Yud Kei Vav Kei. This is what we got as a king. A Russia Manusha. And even after Yehoyakim is no longer the king, so you get some much better things. Yechonia, you get Sitkiyahu the last king. But the people, it's just a downhill slide. After that traumatic event of the slaughter and the massacre at Megiddo and the death of the righteous Yoshiyahu, it's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of time for what? For the Jewish people, till the Khorban. But it was suspended 22 years because that the people really had Hir HaTshuva, what we call Hir HaTshuva. They really felt remorse and they really appreciated the values that he stood for. But this was the one person who could have prevented the Khorban. We don't just mourn the macro. We talked about this in our introduction last week. That was when we talked about what Steven Spielberg accomplished with the character, Ben Kingsley's character, Stern. That's what the Diary of Anne Frank accomplishes. That's what the methodology of the Kalir was. But the Kalir didn't start that methodology. He got it from Yirmiyahu himself, Yirmiyahu, who wrote about Yoshiyahu. Didn't just talk about the city of Yerushalayim or the Jewish people. He spoke about one Jew. How that one human being is a world in himself. And what I'd like to do now for the last 10 minutes is to actually read some of the key lines. On 289, Vayikonen Yirmiyahu al Yoshiyahu. He said the king over the loss of Yoshiyahu. the babies, say Shmona Shana Hechali Drosh Me'elav. He didn't have a father, he didn't have a grandfather who had the game of Minnesota. Out of his own yearning and spiritual seeking, as a young man, he already started to seek out God. The Nechan Wood, descendants of Ham, is referring to Mitzrayim, one of Ham's descendants who settled out of Mitzrayim. The Avram Chanu'alav, right from the word Machana, they encamped against it. The great actions, the great, you know, the great merits and deeds that he's done did not serve as a merit for him. We mentioned the Gimel, Gambachal Malachim Asher Kamalikdor. Amongst all the Jewish, good Jewish kings, he tried to be goaded, defenses, to create a fence around the Torah, so the Torah should be impactful upon the people. Lo Kam Kamal Mimosa Victor. We never had a king like him since the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. We explained that one. Davak bo avon leitzanei hador. What clung to him? The sins of the cynics, of the mockers, of the scorners. Asher achar hadelas kamu listor. They didn't confront him. No, they did it behind closed doors. Achar hadelas. Skip to the cup. We're about four lines from the bottom of this page. Kila hamonai. My masses, meaning that all the hundreds of thousands of Jewish soldiers were kila, were consumed, were annihilated. Lalechas aram narayim. As the Mitzri army was going on its way to Mesopotamia, to Syria, Turkey, aram narayim. Why laman losav or cherev kol shehu be'efrayim? Because what? Yoshiyahu assumed that they were worthy of Losav or Cherev Arzika. What is the Ephraim? Megiddo is the westernmost part of Shevet Ephraim. Lo Shama Lachoza, Lo Shuva Chorayim. Yoshiyahu did not listen. What's a Choza? A seer. It's the Navi. It's another way of saying the Navi, like Chazon Yishayahu. He didn't listen to the Nebuah of Yirmiyahu to back off, not to go to war with Paro Nepho. Turn over. Mechatos sorry. Because of the sin, Stiras Mezuzos, concealed behind the doorpost. Sorry. Because of the sin of those, you know, that was concealed behind the doorpost. What's Chazon Antoti? The vision of Jeremiah, where did Yirmiyahu live? Anatot. Because of the vision of the man from Anatot. You know where Anatot is? It's like French Hills, the northern suburbs of Yerushalayim. That's where he lived. It's the beginning of Matei Binyamin. He was a Kohen, he lived close to the base of Mikdash. Hechelu Levazos. What is that? They mocked. They despised or they mocked the vision. Look at the pay. Pene krav kore, the face of the battle was, the battle took place. The law also lo shi'iya. His good deeds, you know, his great sources didn't serve to protect him. Vayoru hayorim lamelech Yoshiyahu. The archers, they pierced with their arrows the king. Odeni osein enav. His eyelids had already closed. Didn't have the strength to keep his eyes open. Hates after hates, but arrow after arrow, molin the lochatim. Did they pierce his body? Suddenly they took him, the samuhu kemakara lachitim. They took him and they set him up as a bullseye for the archers. The yizriku bosh losh meot chitim. They sent 300 arrows into his body. Sticking to the resh. Ruach fasav he saw me pihu. The very last breath on his lip, I mean, his alignment forces, ba'ad nitzoy nefesh, before his soul departed, before he died, the last breath on his lips, what came out of it? Tzadikhu adushem ki marisi pihu. That's a quote right out of Eicha. He says, Tzidu kadid, I was wrong. Should have listened to the Navi Yirmiyahu. C.C. Nof, what is Nof? Nof is the city of Memphis, is the city of Egypt. You can rejoice.
now, but in the end, you will receive your just due. The top Tam Tesamato. The finest gold, right, is gone. It's complete. It's over. But Yekomina love for Echa Yomzah. Yirmiyahu laments over, he says a Heste, laments over Yoshiyahu. Echa Yomzah. Tam the Mikra Echot Kosmi Hido Mishos. What happened to this event? He was going to war. He drank the bitter cup. Yeah, you know, when you say he drank the bitter cup of Yehuda. The Moed Shasa Shmita. What year was it? It was the summer of the Shmita year, the time, you know, of the Shmita year. Higah HaKel Esos. What was just coming around the corner? In a couple of months, all the Jews would come to the Beit HaMikdash HaKel. But instead of that, Tola Esri Mishrayim, now Rosh Hashanah. Instead of them coming together for Hakka, they came together for what? For his funeral. And because they really sincerely felt remorse and they felt terrible over what they lost, God suspended for 22 years Esri Mishrayim, what's Meharos, from uprooting Shasos, the foundations of the Mikdash. Why? Kisafu lo Echa Yomzah. Because they said the Hesed. They bring himself to Esri Mishrayim, the 22 letters. What's the 22 letters again? He said from A to Z, from Aleph to Tav. Yirmiyahu conveyed to them just the nature of the devastation, the nature of what it means to lose a Yoshiyahu. What we see from Yoshiyahu is what one human being can accomplish. The potential that every Jew has, in that we don't just mourn the macro disruption. We don't just mourn the loss of civilization, the loss of the people. We spend this time of year and we look at the impact and we mourn the loss of one human being. Because in every human being is a universe. Right? One human being is an Olam Mala. And that for sure was the case with Yoshiyahu. We mourn the loss of his innocence. We mourn the loss of his potential. We mourn all that he accomplished and all that he could have been, could have accomplished. And we saw that last week with the survivors who didn't survive, the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel. Well, actually, in 2 weeks, next week we're going to be discussing something very different. But I believe in 2 weeks, when we look at the 21st Tina, we'll look at the impact of the Sararugi Malchus and the impact of, we won't discuss 10 because in Tisha B'Av we actually will discuss 8 of the 10. But the impact of these 8 and what they meant to the Jewish people and what we lost in their loss. Next week we're going to discuss a very, very, very different topic than the approach we've taken the last 2 weeks. But a different aspect of the theme of the 3 weeks and a different aspect of what we mourn during these 3 weeks. That's something we'll discuss next week when we analyze the 22nd and the 25th Kinos, which is really the story of the destruction of Ashkenaz and how irrevocably, with the loss of the Masorah, of the German Rhineland, irrevocably, how that changed Jewish history and the impact that we still feel to this day. Thank you.
Let me shut these off. It's not shut off these.